We continue now with the fifth installment of the tale of Rav Baruch Vyazna, a young man who earnestly sought a derech in avodas Hashem and who came to Brisk to study in the yeshiva of the Tzaddik Rav Shloima and the Mekubal, the Kabbalist Rav Shloima, after which he married, settled in one city, but after that decided to go to Slutsk, or near Slutsk, and we found out that the reason for that was that Slutsk was a place where there was major opposition to Kabbalah and Mekubalim, to the study of Kabbalah, and to the mystics and the wandering tzaddikim nestorim, the hidden mystics who would go around and encourage the simple folk, as was the path of those who were the Baal Shem, or the precursors to the Baal Shem Tov. Baruch had two sons, Yosef and Avraham. When it came time for them to marry, he didn't want them marrying daughters from Slutsk or Balabatim, because he was fearful that they may be opponents to Kabbalah, and so he sent them to Lemberg, where they eventually married very fine girls who were from simple but devout families. And for the first few years after their marriage, Yisnavrom continued learning, but afterwards they went into business as well, the same type of business as their father, taking on an estate, and they worked along the same lines as their father. They also built a Beis HaMedrash and a Beis Hachnosas Orchem, a guest house for wayfarers, and they gave charity most generously. Back to Slutsk, ignoring the fact that Slutsk was a positive fortress of misnagdim against mystics and Kabbalists, these good people, the mystics and the Kabbalists, nevertheless paid numerous visits to this town between the years 5464 and 5469, that's 1704, 1709 approximately. Their visits were surely occasioned by the fact that Baruch had settled there near Slutsk, that he had his yeshiva there, that many of its students had settled on and around Baruch's estate near Slutsk. These mystics and Kabbalists felt that the time had come to overcome the feeling of opposition that existed so strongly in Slutsk towards them, and they wanted to strengthen their own position in this town. Their efforts did not succeed so easily. The opposition towards them was indeed so great that every visitor to the town was regarded with suspicion, lest, God forbid, he might be a mystic or a Kabbalist. If this were the case, there was no mercy shown him, but he was driven out unceremoniously. No, first he was well cursed, and then he was thrown out. The Nestorim refused to be intimidated, however, and continued to pay even more frequent visits to Slutsk and to infiltrate even deeper into the town. These very often ended in clashes with very unpleasant results. One day something occurred which stirred up all the Jews of Slutsk and the neighboring towns. There arrived in Slutsk such a distinguished-looking visitor that everyone received him with great respect. Although he apparently had no wish to draw attention to himself, he had but to say a few words for anyone to see immediately that he was a great scholar. It was recognized that it was not correct to ask a visitor his name unless he volunteered the information himself, and so the people were left to wonder who their distinguished guest might be. They had no doubt that he was a great personality, and so they immediately invited him to avail himself of the hospitality of the best room in their community house, which was reserved for such distinguished visitors. The heads of the Jewish community of Slutsk got busy preparing a formal welcome, inviting all the scholars of the town and district to come and hear the address of their respected and distinguished guest. In order that these scholars should have time to prepare themselves for this discussion which was to follow the lecture, the visitor was asked to name the subject on which he would speak. That was a general practice in Slutsk. Meanwhile, all the notable scholars of the town called and asked for the privilege of meeting this honored visitor to show him that they paid him their respects, and at the same time to have the pleasure of discussing Torah matters with him. When they were received in his room by the great man, each and every one of them was impressed by his appearance, which was positively saintly. His long beard added to his dignity, and his eyes expressed strength of character and determination. By the time the visitor was scheduled to give his address, his fame had already spread, and the large Beis HaMidrash was packed to overflowing. It was not only an audience of Slutsk Jews, but of Jews from all the surrounding towns and villages, so that they were all packed together like sardines, unable to stir. In the audience were also Baruch, Rabbi Menashe Yisrael, and his sons, who were the Rosh Yeshiva of Baruch's Yeshiva, and the students of Baruch's Yeshiva. When the guest speaker walked onto the bima, a pin could have been heard to drop. Such was the quietness that filled the entire Beis HaMidrash. All waited respectfully for the speaker to begin. The speaker had chosen a chapter in the tractate Negaim, and everyone listened with rapt attention. Baruch and Rabbi Menashe Yisrael were rather far away from the speaker, and they had to strain to hear him, though they could not very well see him. Suddenly, Baruch felt his arm grasped by Rabbi Menashe Yisrael, who whispered excitedly in his ear, "I have just caught a glimpse of the speaker. He is none other than the great Rabbi Adam Baal Shem of Ropshitz. He is the one to whom Rabbi Yoel, the Baal Shem of Zamoch, had given over the leadership of the Nestorim, the hidden Kabbalists and Tzaddikim, for the past 6 or 7 years. Baruch had already heard that Rabbi Yoel, before he passed away, had given over the leadership to one of his disciples by the name of Rabbi Adam Baal Shem, but he had never seen him before, nor had he any idea how he looked. This was despite the fact that he had for so long been associated with the Nestorim. Rabbi Adam Baal Shem of Ropshitz, whom only Baruch and Rabbi Menashe Yisrael knew as such, was in the depths of a pilpul, which he conducted in a clear voice. Although he spoke with a Galicianer accent, the Jews of Slutsk, who were of Lithuanian origin, understood him without difficulty. He absolutely charmed his audience with the brilliance of his oratory, as well as with the lucidity of his explanations. They had literally never heard such a wonderful discourse. By the time he finished, everyone was enchanted with him, and they hastened to congratulate him as they almost carried him to his room. No one dared to ask him his name, and no one dreamed that he could possibly belong to the hated mystics or Kabbalists, for they usually traveled about like ordinary Jews. They decided that this gentleman must be a Gaon who had taken upon himself the penance of wandering about in exile, for many great Gaonim indeed did so, and while they did not disclose their identity, they did not hide their scholarship. A banquet had been prepared for that evening in honor of this distinguished guest, but to everyone's surprise, he announced that on that particular day, it was a fast day for him. After Myriff, he took out of his satchel a dry piece of bread, which he dipped in salt and ate, saying that he never put himself under obligation to others, but always looked after himself. He then took a drink of water and began his fast. This mysterious visitor was the talk of Slutsk for the next few days, and all the scholars debated with each other about his great scholarship. They were so concerned about his genius that they forgot to take note of his conduct. Thus, they did not observe that he made a practice of praying and studying the Beis HaMedrash from midnight until the morning, when it was time for morning service. After the service, he retired to his room, locked himself in, remarking that this was his custom already for years, for he then studied on his own. Then a rumor got around that the visitor to whom they were paying so much respect was in fact one of those terrible mystics and Kabbalists. The town shook in horror. How could they have been so deceived? And what could they now do about it? The scholars got together, held meetings, discussed with the rest of the community the awful position they were now in. Some contended that despite the Torah learning of their visitor, if he were indeed a Nister, then he was entitled to no more consideration than any other Nister who had dared to enter their town. He should therefore be abused for his impertinence and kicked out of the town forthwith. Others, not as intolerant as these fanatics, demurred, saying that while they had doubts as to his identity, the outstanding fact remained that his connection with mystics and Kabbalists was in question, but his brilliant Torah scholarship was certain and without question. The discussion as to what should be done with this suspect waxed even hotter. The moderates were in too small a minority for their voices to be heard, and so they could do nothing to stop the decision of the extremists who shouted that they knew how to deal with this sinner. And so a crowd gathered outside the guest house as the intolerant extremists made a rush at the door leading to the distinguished visitor's room. Completely devoid of control, they hurled themselves at the door and broke it open. They pulled themselves short, however, at the sight that met their eyes. This man, whom at first they had so respected, yet now were ready to attack even physically, stood there, completely oblivious of the upheaval taking place around him, clad in talus and tefillin, and praying earnestly. A wave of fear gripped the fanatics, and none dared move to do him harm in the midst of his devotions. They stood by waiting for him to finish. They waited and waited and began to become restive, for his prayers went on hour after hour. The visitor continued his prayers just as if he were alone in the room. Meanwhile, his would-be attackers, inside and outside the building, just fumed at the delay, for it was only the fact that he was praying that kept him immune from their attack. At long last, the visitor concluded his prayers, but instead of taking off his talus and tefillin, he sat down at the table and began his customary shiur, his customary portion of Torah learning, accompanying his studies with a most melodious tune. The fanatics just stood there and looked on helplessly. They were at a loss to know what to do. But finally their anger burnt against him even more on account of the fact that he put them in such an awkward position. Finally, a couple of outstanding scholars of Slutsk approached the visitor and asked him bluntly to tell them if he were truly a Kabbalist and member of the mystics. Without hesitation, he assured them that that was so, that he was a follower of the great Baal Shem of Zamosh Abiel. The visitor arose from his seat with dignity and asked that all those present present accompany him outside, where the noise and turmoil of the angry mob sounded positively ominous. When the younger element in the audience caught sight of this man, for whom they were waiting to administer the punishment they claimed he deserved, they greeted him with insults. The object of their venom remained calm and turned to them with a friendly smile which had a tinge of pity in it. "From your point of view," he began, "you are absolutely right. You deserve to be congratulated for acting according to your convictions. You have proved that you are sincere, and sincerity is a great virtue. When I, too, was as young and intolerant as you are, I was exactly like yourselves. I was then a student at the yeshiva of the Gaon Rav Shlomo Shmuel of Polotsk. He was the brilliant pupil of Rav Shammai Zundel, the son of Rav Pinchas Zelig, the Gaon of Speyer, who, as is well known, conducted a campaign against Rav Elyo, the Baal Shem of Worms. His son, Rav Shmuel Zundel, and my teacher, Rav Shlomo Shmuel, were all resolute in their absolute opposition to Kabbalists and mystics. Naturally enough, I took the same point of view as my teacher, and was equally bitter in my hatred towards them. But at the same time, I was very careful not to sin by letting any insults or curses pass my lips." The visitor stopped to see how his words were affecting his listeners. They were all listening open-mouthed to this man who seemed to have a strange power over them. They were not yet sure what he was trying to prove to them. "During the course of the years," continued the visitor in the same gentle, friendly voice, "I came to realize that, after all, my teacher and all those others who were opposed to the mystics and Kabbalists had made a big mistake. I was then 33 years of age when I decided to take up a course of study at the yeshiva of Rabbi Yoel, the Baal Shem of Zamosh. I stayed at this yeshiva for 15 years, studying Kabbalah. It is now between 6 and 7 years since I am a member of the mystics. Now you know all about me, and you, my friends, who are assembled before me now, you are mostly young in years. It is too soon for you to have a proper opinion on such a matter. The day will come, however, when you will learn wisdom and see the truth. As regards myself, I would like to say that the abuse you hurled upon me today is dearer to me than the respect you paid me yesterday." The words of the speaker had a remarkable effect upon his audience. Not one of them thought of lifting a finger or even saying a word against him. They just stood there, a deathly stillness reigning over all. The visitor turned and quietly entered his room. An hour later, he was seen, stick in hand, pack on the shoulder, ready to make his departure. Some of the elder scholars in the town, feeling that an injustice had been done him, begged the visitor to reconsider and remain in Slutsk. He refused to be persuaded, however, and insisted that he leave. About 20 Jews from Slutsk left with him, and only then was it realized that these Jews were mystics who had all the time been working in secret in and around Slutsk to spread the teaching of Kabbalah and adherence to the mystics. As a matter of fact, it was these Jews who had prepared the way for the coming of this distinguished visitor. It was they who were responsible for it becoming known that this great man, who had not disclosed his identity, was no less a person than Rab Odom Baal Shem of Ropshitz. He was not just an ordinary mystic, but the actual leader of all the mystics, and he, Rav Odom, later passed on the leadership to Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. This event created an upheaval amongst the fanatical Jews of Slutsk. They had never before actually come face to face with a mystic, let alone such a distinguished one as Rabbanan Baal Shem. He had made such a deep and profound impression on them that many of them began to think that perhaps they had been too severe on mystics and Kabbalists. He had certainly convinced them that he, a mystic and Kabbalist, was a genius and saint, and had he not himself admitted that he was once an opponent of mystics and Kabbalists, and only later arrived at the conclusion that he was wrong? Was that not that sufficient to show that they could safely rely upon him? At least it was up to them to look into this matter more thoroughly, and not just pass judgment upon it blindly. And still there were some who continued to feel that they had been fooled, and were resentful in consequence. And so, while Slutsk remained a fortress of Misnagdim, it was a little less extreme in its views than before. Which is to say that while Rabbanan Baal Shem had broken into this fortress with his visit, he had yet to capture it. As we already know, many of Baruch's Talmidim, his pupils who had had their training at his yeshiva, had settled in that district, and while Baruch had kept the question of Kabbalah out of his yeshiva, his pupils had nevertheless been given such a training as to make them receptive to such a teaching. Now the time was ripe for it, and they were naturally the first to feel the effect of the Baal Shem's visit to Slutsk, for he had made a deep impression upon friend and foe alike. The interests of the students and ex-students of Baruch's yeshiva and mystics and Kabbalists now grew by leaps and bounds. They did not need any encouragement from anyone. They themselves began to delve into this new study of Kabbalah and the life of its adherents, so that the number of followers and supporters of mystics and Kabbalists increased in and around Slutsk. And that is what Baruch of Yezhin had waited and worked so patiently for. This was in fact the purpose of his having settled on the estate near Slutsk and establishing his yeshiva there. It was his mission to bring his activities into this district to prepare the ground for the coming of Rabbanan Baal Shem and for the Hasidim, which later came into the very heart of the Misnagdic world. When Baruch of Yezhin became 60 years of age, he decided to give up business and devote himself completely to Torah study. He then called his sons, Yosef and Avram, from Lemberg, and together with his wife, drew up an account of all he possessed. Baruch regarded his wife, who was the daughter of a mystic, as the one who had brought him success in his life. He therefore always consulted her in matters of business, and indeed made no important decisions without her knowledge and agreement. When he had reckoned up the sum total of all his capital and possessions in movable and immovable property, he put aside one-fifth for charity. He divided the remainder into five equal parts, and again put aside one-fifth for charity. The remaining four-fifths he divided in equal parts for his two sons, his wife, and himself. This meant that he had apportioned a considerable sum of money for charity. Half of this amount he gave into the care of the leader of the mystics, Rabbanan Baal Shem of Ropshitz, and the other half he himself distributed among various institutions and charitable organizations. He now handed over to his two sons the management of his business and estates, the income of which was to be divided annually in four parts after one-tenth miser had been given to charity. The final installment of how Rabbanan finally met the Baal Shem Tov, and again we're speaking of Rabbanan V'Yazner, not to be confused with Rabbanan the Alter Rebbe's father, and the subsequent events in Rabbanan's life and Yosef Avrom's life, and how Hasidus penetrated Slutsk, Yemirtzen Hashem, in the final installment next time.